Why didn't he just forgive them? Why was it necessary to have a human sacrifice, to have his son tortured and executed in order that the sins of mankind should be absolved? Is that not the most disgusting idea you ever heard?
What non-believers don't tend to do is make unjustified and unjustifiable claims about the nature of the cosmos and about the divine origin of certain books and the basis of those experiences.
Do you believe there are laws of logic then?
Absolutely.
Are they universal?
They're agreed upon by human beings. They aren't laws that exist out in nature. They are.
Are they simply conventions then?
They're conventions, but they're conventions that are self-verifying.
Are they sociological laws or laws of thought?
They are laws of thought which are interpreted by men and promulgated by men.
Are they material in nature?
How can a law be material?
That's the question I'm going to ask you.
I would say no. Dr. Bronson, would you call God material or immaterial?
Immaterial.
What is something that's immaterial?
Something not extended in space.
And can you give me an example of anything other than God that's immaterial?
Laws of logic.
We can place our confidence only in human conversation.
Because I have confidence that it's true. I have confidence that Sean's not
going to stab faith,
me.
So you have faith, Bruce? Bruce, you have faith?
It's confidence,
Bruce,
it's not
you have,
faith.
Bruce doesn't have faith. He doesn't have faith. He has confidence. Confidence. Confide. From the Latin. With faith.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Every A podcast, a discussion of biblical Christianity and oppositions to that faith from various, atheistic perspectives, agnostic perspectives, hence the Every A. It always seems to start with an A because technically that's what it comes down to. It comes down to an anti-belief in God, although I do believe that that is a suppression. I don't think that it's just straight unbelief. I think some of it is self-deception, but ultimately I think that everybody does have enough to know that there is a God that exists. Now I do think that we need the Bible to flesh out who that God is, but I don't think we see the Trinity in nature. I don't think that just because there's a three-leaf clover, oh, that's the Father, the Son, and Holy Spirit. But I do think that given the Bible is part of our world, it's not just nature. Like if you want to talk about natural revelation, I think the Bible is. It is special revelation, but especially to our generation, the Bible is a part of our world. It's not just something out there in the ether, and then we have our natural world over here. We are going to be getting a little bit into the discussion of natural and supernatural, but always my big talking point is always going to be hitting at the foundations and the underpinnings that people who have objections to Christianity, the objections that they make have underpinnings and frameworks that don't actually work. So I think sometimes that gets lost because we just kind of grant it to them that their system makes sense, but the system doesn't make sense. And that is, again, one of the huge reasons why I think that I really wanted to do a podcast. I talked to so many people that just didn't, and I was there too. I was also in one of those positions where, I was really trying to figure out like how do you come up against some of these atheistic arguments? Like how do you deal with that? And honestly, it was because I was just granting all these presuppositions to them and just saying, yeah, sure, I'll play along, but that doesn't make any sense. And that doesn't work. So we are going to be continuing on. We're not reviewing a Wikipedia article today. I thought we'd take a brief break from that. And we're actually heading over to an article that was written in 2015 by someone, I don't know if I can pronounce that last name right, but someone who is written by someone who is named Jared Sinman. So interesting, we're going to go into it. He definitely is an atheist, definitely not, or at least at the time of this writing, was an atheist and was not an agnostic. So no possibility for a god, according to this individual. So we're going to be running through the article because I think that this, he presents, you know, some big reasons or big arguments against Christianity. And I think that this really can showcase, you know, this is what the other side has. And so we're going to just walk through the article. Hopefully there's not misrepresentation, but again, as we saw in the last program, typically the general populace has not interacted or seriously interacted with Reformed theology. And so, you know, a lot of these people are kind of targeting, you know, the Kenneth Copeland crowd or the feel-good Christian crowd. You know what I'm talking about. And if you don't, it might be you. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, honestly, though, those are the kind of people that don't really, you know, it's not the super serious Christianity in the sense that we're going to be intellectual about this, but it's more of the emotive Christianity. So we're just going to emote through, you know, various feelings of gratefulness and meaning. And all those things do come with Christianity, but I think that there's an overemphasis placed on some groups of the emotions of it. And emotions are very shallow. And I think that your emotions aren't actually going to last very long when you come up against stuff like this because you've not actually done the homework. So moving along. And, you know, of course, I do want to... Yeah, I'll give a disclaimer on that. I'm not saying that we need to be all dry and stuffy. I think that if you are dry and stuffy, that already tells me a lot about, you know, your faith, I think. But at the same time, when you're learning things, you should be going into a deeper appreciation for biblical truth. So let's stop talking about that, though. Let's get into the article. So again, he has titled this article, The Five Best Reasons Not to Believe in God. So just starting off, he gives an honest preface, I think, an honest introduction. So we're going to take a look at that. So he says, most religions at best have some kernels of morality that come with a lot of baggage that make people do appalling things. So putting on the brakes, end quote there, putting on the brakes right there. Appalling things, according to you, according to society, according to just this abstract morality that you have. And we are going to be going into like kind of, more Wikipedia articles in the future about, you know, how, some types of secular responses to dealing with evil in the world and morality and the existence of morality. Because again, morals and morality are one of those things in this conversation where you can pretend like it's relative, but it's definitely 100% not. And I know sometimes you'll hear the argument, while different cultures, different countries, you know, certain things are okay. And, you know, I think you just come back to, you really need to go to an emotional argument. You know, they'd be like, well, one thing that's right for one culture might not be right for another culture. And I think it's one of those things where it's like, well, that's not true. Because we don't actually live that way, not really. And, you know, so like I think an easy example, I saw a debate with an atheist one time where basically he said, you know, for cannibals, like a tribe isolated from the world who's a cannibal, you know, would it be okay for him to go visit that tribe and partake in the killing of and eating of humans? Well, and then come back to our culture and it's okay. No, I mean, that's where the, again, it kind of showcases the silliness of it. Just because someone doesn't know something is wrong, that doesn't make it right, if that makes sense. Or just because there's not like an, not everybody's walking around with the Ten Commandments in their head. I said that before. But we do, our society has been greatly blessed with a lot of knowledge. And a lot of people, even if they've never heard the gospel, even if they've never heard of Christianity, are going to live in the light of a type of moral code. And again, this can be corrupted, and it's not a perfect thing. I'm not trying to tell you that everyone has good morality within them. People know to a degree when they are in rebellion against a God, all right? Because it's that natural revelation that we all have. So let's get into it. Appalling things. It's a term. It's a loaded term. What do you even mean by saying something like that? What? How are you defining appalling? But we continue on. The world can do without religion. Here are five reasons why. Now, I'm not really sure if he's trying to give five reasons why the world can do without religion, or if he's trying to give five reasons why God doesn't exist, or both, but we're going to continue on. So he says, why am I writing this column? I get a lot of this kind of feedback when I publish pieces on atheism. Atheists, as it turns out, get attacked from all sides. Well, stopping right there, you can't blame people for that. If you're a consistent atheist, I believe the only consistent atheist is going to be a nihilist. So it all doesn't matter. Yeah, you can say that locally or cosmically, but it all doesn't matter ultimately. And most people are going to push back on that type of idea because they know it's not true, right? So like even if you look at like the left wing of the American political party, according to an atheist perspective, all the things that they're fighting for, that they say are good, like all these, and again, biblically, I would be opposed to many of the things, but all of the things that they are working towards from an atheist perspective, it's just like, yeah, you can work towards those. But I mean, honestly, it's all relative anyway, or at least, I mean, okay, that's moral relativism, but in the very least, an atheist is going to be like, well, ultimately, injustice doesn't really matter. You know, it doesn't really matter if someone's oppressed or not. Not ultimately, you know. But we continue on. Intellectuals attacked the robustness of our arguments, and the religious attack the content. So this is going to be an interesting perspective, I think. And then he goes on to say, which is all fine. I'm putting myself out there, and the debate is worthwhile and welcomed. These are weighty matters, and one shouldn't decide one's position lightly. Fair enough. I think that that's probably the one thing I would agree on. I definitely don't think you should lightly disregard God. So, moving on. He says, I'm going to be up front. My hope and goal is that the belief in God and the religions that underpin it are wiped from the face of the earth. I think they are pernicious, facile, and malevolent. And I think the world would be a better place without them. Again, all those words, it's all just big bluster. It's just posturing. It doesn't mean anything from his worldview. Because you're just, I mean... As Jeff Durbin has said it, you're just stardust, you're just matter and motion. And they might say, oh, no, we're not just matter and motion, we're not just stardust. But if you go back far enough, you know, your ancestors are fish or whatever, why do you have a moral complaint? Just because you reason? That's not a good enough, quote-unquote, reason to have a moral complaint, but we move on. So for some reason, the world would be a better place without them, according to this person. If I can make any contribution to this, no matter how small, I would consider that worthwhile. Again, I don't know why you would consider that worthwhile, because what's the point? But we move on. So now that my cards are on the table, I thought I'd lay out what I consider to be the five best reasons to stop believing. I don't imagine that any fundamentalist Muslims or reborn Christians are going to be persuaded. But for those on the fence or open to the possibility of non-belief, this may tip you over the edge. I also, by the way, don't hope to satisfy academic philosophers with the rigors of my case. You guys don't need my help with this stuff anyway. So this is actually a very big personal pet peeve of mine when it comes. Now, this is an article, so it's even a larger pet peeve, but people do this a lot on social media. People say, you know, here's my opinion, but I'm going to leave it ultimately to the professionals, or here's my opinion, but I'm not really looking for a debate here. As soon as you post something in a public place on a public forum, you are subject to criticism and scrutiny, and you're going to get debate. And I don't think you should scratch your head over that. And I don't think you should, you know, just putting a disclaimer saying, well, I'm not looking for a debate, but, you know, 5G is going to control your mind. What? You know, and that's, like, I mean, that's a silly thing to say. You know, 5G doesn't control your mind, and, you know, or whatever the 5G people want to say. It doesn't matter. That's a whole other discussion, which we are not going to talk about here. But the point is that, you know, you can't just post an opinion and then expect no one to respond just because you had a little disclaimer. If you really don't want to get feedback, if you really don't want to discuss it, just don't say it then. Because, you know, then you're just blowing air. So, reason number one. Now, that was just my little rant because that's a big pet peeve of mine. Reason number one, no evidence. He says, most things which we accept on the basis of proof. That proof is not always rock solid, and some of it is based on spurious media claims, for example, but that is a standard to which we hold most of our beliefs. Things that don't meet that standard, the tooth fairy, let's say, we discard as not impossible, but extremely unlikely. So, the tooth fairy is not impossible, but extremely unlikely. That's ridiculous. Now, they're not going to, you know, the argument, the pushback that you're going to get is, well, what's the difference between the tooth fairy and God? And we'll get into that, but again, it's a false equivocation, right? I mean, you're not a tooth fairyite. You don't really believe in the tooth fairy. And the tooth fairy isn't real. Again, we got to go back to what is reality. That would be like me saying, you know, well, we don't believe in math. Or I don't believe in math because I don't believe in the tooth fairy. But math works. And math is not a physical thing. It is a way of describing physical things. But math is not like in space. I mean, you hear that at the beginning of my opening. It's actually one of my favorite parts. Is when Dr. Bonson, and I would highly recommend you go listen to that full debate. It's Dr. Bonson versus Gordon Stein. Very good debate. I think it really showcases this. But, and that was not recent. That's an old debate. I mean, you can probably tell from the audio. But let's move on. So things that don't meet that standard, the tooth fairy, let's say, we discard as not impossible, but extremely unlikely. God, however, many people accept with no proof at all. Well, that's not true. Belief in God is a product of upbringing, societal and cultural convention, and a desire for comfort and intellectual laziness. So he brings this big diatribe here, and it's just it holds no water. People, you know, I'll let him finish his thought here. He goes on to say, there is no evidence that God exists. You may have had some kind of personal experience, what we anecdotal, or he misspelled, had a typo there, but what we call anecdotal evidence that has convinced you personally that he is out there. But most people would concede that that kind of evidence is not evidence at all. It can't be repeated under test conditions, and there are other possible explanations for what may have happened. Fact, no one has ever presented one iota of persuasive evidence that there is a God. No, but no one has presented one iota of evidence that you will accept. I honestly believe that no matter what was presented to someone who is in rebellion against God, it would not be enough. And furthermore, I think that if the sky cracked open, and I do believe when that happens, when the sky cracks open and Christ comes back and it's all wrapped up, anyone who, you know, the people who are in hell are not going to, like, they will worship, but they are not going to love God. And they are going to be just as much a rebel as they were, you know, before they saw, you know, what they would consider substantial evidence. So the issue is not the evidence. Don't let people trip you up with that. It has absolutely nothing to do with the evidence. There is plenty of good, solid evidence out there, but you do not become a Christian because you see evidence. You become a Christian because, first and foremost, God regenerates your heart. You are a spiritually dead individual. And God does a supernatural work and brings you back to spiritual life. And that is how you become a Christian. And at that point, then you are capable of interpreting evidence. But again, as long as you are spiritually dead, you are not an objective person just measuring evidence. You're not just a machine going, oh, look at this evidence and this evidence, or this evidence must be right. You're not doing that. You may think that you're doing that, but you are not. You are a rebel sinner dead in sin that is interpreting evidence. And oh my goodness, it just so happens that, you know, the evidence leans in my favor. I wonder why. But we move on. He says there's no evidence that God exists. And he does go on to mention anecdotal evidence. Okay, to be fair, I don't really like anecdotal evidence. I think that there is a time and a place to say, you know, God did a work, and I feel it and I know it. But I feel like that's kind of airy. I think, again, that's not hitting the underpinnings. These are the type of arguments that Christians give that unfortunately they give because typically they haven't had a lot of interactions with or a lot of debating and dialogue with non-believers. And as a result, you get this, I just know it's true. And I mean, who can refute that, right? When you've had an experience, it kind of shuts down the whole thing and feels like that's a good argument. And I mean, there is a time and a place for that, but I kind of wanted to equip people to actually hit back. It's not enough to be on the defensive here. I think you need to actually be shooting back. Get off the defensive. Put them on the defensive for once, right? And, you know, clap back at their foundations. You know, you believe in math? Why? Why do you appeal to uniformity? Where does that come from? How do you know that tomorrow is going to be like yesterday? And you can't just say, well, because, you know, yesterday was like the day before that, before the day before that. Well, why do you know that's going to keep going? What reason do you have to believe that? You don't have a reason to believe that just because the last 2,000 years were the same. I mean, or however many thousand years, it doesn't matter. 10 minutes. You have no reason to believe that the last 10 minutes are going to dictate how your next 10 minutes are going to be. You could float away to the ceiling. You don't know. And you might say, well, I don't have a lot of reason to believe that. Yes, I know you don't. That's the absurdity of your view. That's the point. It doesn't work. That's absurd. We don't actually live that way. We don't get into our car and be like, oh, I wonder if my car is going to fly today. I wonder if the laws of aerodynamics are, not laws, but I wonder if aerodynamics are going to change and my car is going to function like a plane this morning on the way to work. We don't live that way because we know that there's like a certain law and order, but that's not physical, but we all appeal to it though. And that comes from God. That is the only explanation. Because otherwise, you know, if it's just all matter and motion, you have no reason to believe that there's going to be any type of uniformity. But I digress. So, moving along. We go on to number two. He says, it's illogical. Wow. Well, you know that at this point, we are going to be stopping very shortly in this sentence. In the absence of evidence, which we just talked about, some people try to argue that there must be a God because nothing else makes sense. Well, I think it depends on how you're trying to, I mean, maybe he'll flesh that out a little bit more in the coming paragraphs here. But here's the ultimate thing. It's just funny because no, it doesn't make sense, actually. Your worldview doesn't make any sense. But moving on. He says, this not making sense ranges from the naive, I just feel like there must be a bigger purpose to life. Fair enough. I mean, I think that there is a bigger purpose to life, and I think you are going to feel that because there's going to be a, it's cheesy, but a quote-unquote God-shaped hole, but moving along. To the sophisticated arguments presented by theologians, philosophers, and apologists. I cannot present and knock down every instance of these arguments here. However, I can say this. The idea that one can reason God into existence is a failed project. The best anyone has been able to do is to show God could be an explanation for how the universe got here and could be the best available explanation. I wouldn't accept either of these, but even if I did, they do not they do not constitute a conclusive logical position. If you are comfortable with a maybe, then you are welcome to it. But the existence of God has not been logically proven by anyone ever. Here's the thing. Without God, you don't have logic. It's all random. You have no reason. What is logic? Is logic material or immaterial? Is logic changing or unchanging? How you answer these questions? You know, if you say logic is changing, then I can say logic is not logic. Logic changes and doesn't change. And now you're in Disneyland. You know, you're in Fun World. As soon as so logic is definitely unchanging. It has to be, unless you just want to go play in the Disneyland play park somewhere and you're out of the discussion already. But if logic doesn't change, where does that come from? Itself? It's not physical. We move along. So he says he can't knock down every argument. Well, honestly, it's just a little frustrating because the arguments he does knock down are the lame butt arguments that you get from those who have not really thought this through. He says, if you're comfortable with a maybe, this is one thing where you actually do have to feel a little sorry. I think the humanity should feel a little sorry when you read that sentence. If you are comfortable with a maybe, then you're welcome to it. This is someone who's never experienced regeneration. And so he doesn't actually have the hardware capable of understanding the assurance that a Christian has. That work has not been done in him. He has not been regenerated. And so he's actually not even capable of understanding this. From his perspective, the best thing that you could have is a maybe. Those of you who are consistent Christians are going to know that that's just not true. But moving on. The preponderance of suffering. This is his third point. In a recent interview, the British comedian Stephen Fry delivered a vicious, scathing attack on the Judeo-Christian God when asked about what he would say if it turned out, after he died, that God did in fact exist. He called this God a maniac, pointing to a large amount of unnecessary suffering in the world, which he, by definition, created and allows. This is actually really going to be pushing back towards the last podcast, and also first podcast that I did with the problem of evil, and you could even say the problem of evil and suffering. The existence of suffering is an impossible problem for believers here's that argument, in an all good, caring God to solve. If they use the wiggle room to argue that that without some suffering, there can be no charity, or that people who do wrong are punished, they cannot account for suffering of innocent children and animals, or worse, the devout believers in their faith. Stopping right there. What have we been talking about? Go right for the jugular. Go right for the foundation. The problem of suffering. What's wrong with suffering according to your worldview? Why is it wrong? Why is it bad? Give me... Oh, here's a good one. Because you don't seem to like anecdotal. Give me non-anecdotal evidence that suffering is wrong. I'll wait. And, you know, going on, and I mean, I'm trying to be charitable here, but sometimes it's just frustrating because I wish that they would deal with a better argument. And I think some, to be fair, some atheists and agnostics have attempted to deal with this type of apologetic, and we will be interacting with them in the future. But it's just difficult to sift through all the articles. So he said, even if they use the wiggle room to argue that without some suffering, there can be no charity. That's not the point at all. Man's responsible for the suffering. But going back to those attributes of God, all good, all knowing, all powerful God, well, then there can't be suffering because I'm going to define what's right and wrong, and God is going to be held to my standards of what right and wrong are. No. We don't determine right and wrong. We don't determine morality. We understand morality based on what God does. The reason God is all good is because God defines good. God is literally good. And he cannot be anything else. He cannot be bad because the definition of bad and evil is what he is not. And what he has said is not right. So it's not that God, like there's this in the ether somewhere, this morality that we all and God appeal to. And then we can judge God based on this morality that is over God. It doesn't work like that. But there's just not a working understanding of that type of concept, typically. But we move on. And just to be fair, and I mean, we might have to cut this one short because we're kind of really chopping into time here, but it's our, we're only about half hour in, but, you know, at the end there, he says, or we're with the suffering, children and animals. Well, I don't know why that's wrong in your worldview, or worse, the devout believers in their faith. Well, typically, here's a question. Who is typically the one persecuting Christians these days? It's the secularists. You know, you look over at China, secular state, communist secular state. Those are just buzzwords, but, you know, who is persecuting the Uyghur Muslims? And I would disagree. I don't believe that they're believing in a real God, but doesn't matter. Who is persecuting the religious over in China? Is it religious? Well, I mean, maybe you could make an argument that everyone's religious to some degree. But that's another topic. Moving along. What kind of God, we may ask, and Fry does, more colorfully, has created a world in which children die in floods, starve to death, perish in agony from TB and malaria? What kind of God allows people to worship and adore him, to be murdered, raped, tortured, and come to countless other hideous ends? He seems to take some pretty big moral complaints with the death of children. Why? I don't understand. I don't get it from his worldview. Now, here's the thing. In a sense, I do understand because going back to that, because he doesn't really believe that. He really does appeal to, you know, if he looks at that stuff, he really might, Fry might think that that's wrong. He can't give a good reason why, but he does. Because he's in God's world. So, all those things he listed, he says, are wrong. But again, don't know why, unless you start going to the Christian worldview. This does not preclude the existence of any God, of course. God might be, as Fry has it, a maniac. He may be vicious, sadistic, or he may be a vicious, sadistic God. Or like the Greeks and Romans before us, he may be a pantheon of narcissistic gods who have no interest in looking out for us. But a God who has a God who was benevolent, loving, as we are told the Christian God is, would never create the world we live in. It's just funny how they just automatically elevate themselves to judging God. It's just, that is a biblical concept, by the way. That unbelievers, they make themselves God and judge. And we too often let them. We too often let them sit in the judgment seat. And what do we say? Judge the evidence for yourself. And I think that there is a time and a place, you know, in a gospel conversation where you can bring evidence into it. I'm not against evidence. But far too often, we just start with evidence and we end with evidence. And it's just evidence, 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 and you judge, you know? And that's wrong. Because then this is the type of stuff you're going to get. Believing in him requires either shuttering yourself off from the carnage all around you. Well, obviously that's not true. I'm living proof of that. Or crafting frankly ridiculous excuses. God works in mysterious ways. So that's his example. Well, you know, the bottom line is there's not going to be an attempt at getting past the presuppositions here, because it's just when you're in God's world of logic and reason and all that, and God owns all those things, it's just not possible. It is one thing to talk to another Christian about pain and suffering, but you're going to have a good doctrine of that. You're going to have a good understanding of how that's happening because you'll be reading the Bible and you'll be understanding how that works. But we're not doing a Bible study like that with an atheist, because an atheist is in rebellion against God. So why would he care what God's law says? It's not going to have any bearing on him. So we move on. That was a pretty rough argument, to be honest. Moving to number four, we don't need him. Possibly one of the most ridiculous, ignorant, arrogant arguments that can be made. This isn't exactly an argument against the truth of God, but it is a reason to stop worrying about him. We don't require God. He is an unnecessary addition to the universe, and we can get along perfectly well without him. See, that's just incredibly arrogant and ignorant. The absolute suppression of the same God that's giving you the breath and the fingers to write that sentence. Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. We don't need him. Logic, morality, all that. I mean, I'll borrow all that from the worldview and just pretend like it's not coming from the Christian universe. But you know what? We don't need him. That's ridiculous. The arrogance and ignorance is just astonishing. The most common two arguments for why we quote-unquote need God is as a personal savior or caretaker. I don't know what the caretaker part is. And that without him and religion, we would not know what is morally right and wrong. So here we go. Maybe we do get a dealing with this after all. Let me start with the last first. Human morality is not brought into existence by God or the Bible. We do not require a commandment to tell us that killing is wrong, and we do not need the threat of eternal damnation to make us do what is right. To prove this, I only need to point out that most Western states operate on the basis of a constitution and the rule of law. We have nothing and have nothing to do with religion in the Bible. Wow. Wow. The ignorance of human history is just staggering. Western rule in law has nothing to do with religion. Wow. Pick up a history book, dude. Like, I mean, there's a lot here to talk about. I'm almost at a loss for words of where to start. But I guess we'll start first with the history. Yes, actually, believe it or not, if you go back into history, you know, the Constitution and Charter of Rights, all that stuff does come from religion. And oh my goodness, it just so happens to be outlined in Exodus. You know, the right to a fair trial, the right to not self-incriminate. Where does all that come from? I can look at the Bible and figure that out. And it just so happens that this stuff that was written, you know, thousands of years later, just so happens to take from it. People are unbelievably ignorant. Many, not everybody, and in the religion, I was not perfect, but, you know, take America. When they came over on the Mayflower, they had a copy of the Geneva Bible. You know, and I'm not saying that they were all Christians, but there were Christians. I don't even know what to say. You could at least be honest about history. But I'll move on. Killing someone. I can't move on, actually. I'm sorry. I need to dwell on this a little more. Then he almost acts as if laws dictate morality. That's interesting. Right and wrong, it is dependent on law. This is actually something that's incredibly pervasive, even amongst inexperienced Christians. They'll just kind of take this at face value, almost a good answer, like morality is determined by right and wrong. Oh, yeah, that's what determines right and wrong, yeah. No, right and wrong is not determined by which laws are in place. If we all woke up tomorrow and someone came up to you and said, society has agreed that it is okay for you to go up to this 8-year-old child and shoot them. It doesn't matter if it's passed legislation into law. It would be wrong morally. You can have immoral laws. Let's take it a little more close to home. What about the segregation laws from the 50s? Were those right? Because we all take moral complaint with those now, right? We all walk around. And they were wrong. But they weren't wrong because now we've changed the law and then look back and be like, oh, that was a bad law. They were wrong because the Bible says they're wrong. But that, I just, that's staggering. The ignorance in that, you know, sentence. And he says, oh, but I hear you say, surely these laws and rights have a biblical origin. Do you really believe that? Do you really think that pre-religious societies had no taboos in regard to the preservation of life, property, and other things we hold dear? That a principle like do unto others would not naturally emerge from any group of sentient beings living in the same place. Why would it emerge? What would be the point? I don't understand. You should be functioning in self-interest. Evolution, baby. And I mean, of course, evolution is a very complicated topic. I'm not trying to completely reduce it to a sentence, but honestly, all the social issues of today, that does not comport with atheism. You cannot tell me honestly that all these moral complaints that everyone has comports with atheism. Come on. And they just emerged naturally. Without anything, just blobs of matter, you know, saying you should be good to this blob of matter and that blob of matter should be good to me, who is also a blob of matter. It's just ridiculous. And he doesn't give justification for it. He just says, come on, guys, it would all work, which is basically all they've got. No, it wouldn't emerge normally. No, it wouldn't. Moving along. This is quite apart from the fact that many of the laws in the Bible are just wicked. According to what? What? You keep using these words, wicked. All right, let's move on. We have not, thankfully, and for the most part, transferred most of Leviticus and Deuteronomy into modern law. Thankfully, for whatever reason, he says. Those Islamic states who have, which enforce Sharia law, are widely regarded as zones of horror by most sensible people. Agreed, but not according to your worldview. Then, do we need God as a personal savior? Well, some people might. What? The idea of God might provide comfort and an explanation of the mysteries of the universe. However, it is misleading to say he is, quote unquote, needed. Many people survive and thrive perfectly well without God. without a God concept or religion. Myself being one example. We do not rampage or lose our way or become outcasts. And so whilst certain individuals may derive comfort from a belief in God, as is their right, for whatever reason, I don't know why he thinks there's rights, this is neither a necessary or sufficient condition for living a good life. Well, first of all, you can't breathe without God. So let's start there. Let's get that straight. But second of all, it doesn't matter. He's still functioning. If you don't kill people, you're functioning a biblical law. If you don't eat, if you don't cannibalize, and you think you're civilized, that's biblical law. And there are some biblical laws that haven't made it to other, I understand. But what I'm saying is that, you know, this person ignorantly walks along in life. And I'm not saying he lives a, so I guess I should add a definition to this. When I say that, you know, people are living according to biblical law, I'm not saying that they're keeping all the commandments, but I am saying that there are certain commandments that they are keeping, and they are definitely benefiting from most of the commandments, all right? Now, he does get into Leviticus and Deuteronomy, which is another discussion. Some of that stuff didn't carry over. But again, you need to be a Christian in order to understand textual criticism. And how that all fits together, and this man just isn't. So I guess I should offer some charity there. Many people survive and thrive perfectly well without God, a God concept. That's, I guess, true, but that's not an argument, you know? But finally, we get to the fifth and final reason. Life's better without him. Well, this is interesting. Religion is about control and limitation. Why is that wrong? Rules, laws, rituals that restrict and govern behavior, in some cases, say the genital mutilation of infants in barbaric rites of passage practiced by religions such as Judaism. They actually persuade people to do awful things. I shouldn't have to say it anymore. Every time, you guys should be just making a mental note. He made a moral claim. He made a moral claim. Where's that coming from? It's just arbitrary. It's fairy dust for them. It doesn't matter. Which is to say, it shouldn't matter, I should say. It does, but they don't know why. Which is to say that nothing of the countless other horrors committed in the name of God and religion, suicide bombings, torture, genocide, forced marriages, unwanted babies, war. Oh, like secularism hasn't brought horrors to the world. Stalin, Mao, why don't you hop over to a Uyghur concentration camp and explain the glories of secularism to them? I'm sure they'd appreciate it. But I digress. Even if none of that had happened, wouldn't be an argument. The list is endless. Endless list. A life without religion and without God thus offers freedom from all these miseries. Don't know why. It offers a person the opportunity to do what they like. Here's the thing. I'm stopping right there. All those wars of religion you hear, it was people doing what they liked. It was not, you know, the Crusades. Stain on Christian history. Absolute stain on Christian history. It was people doing what they liked. That's what it was. It was people not following biblical. It doesn't matter if they said they were, they weren't. It was people not following biblical law. I move on. It offers the person an opportunity to do what they like in line with their own moral code. Stopping right there. Notice that. In line with their own moral code. Interesting. So what happens when your moral code doesn't line up with mine and they're in direct conflict with each other? No answer to that. Because then one person's going to try to get the leg up on the other. Within the parameters of the society within they live, each decision to be taken is evaluated on its own merits, weighing up the pros and cons, and it is not forced down a path by a pre-existing code of conduct dating to a time of ignorance and superstition. It is, but you just pretend like it's not. Life is better without God and religion encouraging you to make poor choices, according to what? And validating them when you do. The journey into escaping the God idea and rejecting religion can be a long one. For those deeply invested in these notions, they may begin by being unable to imagine a meaningful life without them. That's logical to me. However, it starts with a seed of doubt, with the sense that a fairy story is at work here, not the solid rock of reality. Perhaps these five arguments will plant that small seed for reading this piece. For some reading this piece. And that's the article. Hopefully that was helpful for you. I hope that you were able to derive something, hopefully, that helps you in your conversations with various atheists and agnostics and just plain people who don't care. A lot of people are going to function on one of these, and I thought, in terms of like representation, I feel like it's a good article. But guys, that's all I've got for you today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Subscribe, message me on Twitter, and I will see you next time. Thanks.